It's the morning show. I'm Shireen Seward in for Kate Archer-Kent. Disasters, from extreme weather events to public health crises, are a risk for all people in the United States. But some segments of the population are more vulnerable than others to the consequences. How can local officials plan for emergencies in a way that mitigates the impact of disasters for the people most at risk? Join in this discussion on a new study that found gaps in the way emergency plans work in communities across Wisconsin. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Samantha Larson is an assistant professor of public administration at the University of Wisconsin-Oshkosh. She is deputy director of the Whitburn Center for Governance and Policy Research and has been studying disaster response on a local and national level for more than a decade. Sam, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Shireen. Good morning, and thanks for having me.
The Whitburn Center's new study examines socially vulnerable populations and how counties include them in their emergency response plans. What did you find?
Yeah, so I think a number of things, but I'll focus on one of the main pieces that really came out of this study, and that is that socially vulnerable groups, and we looked at just four, there are many others, but that includes folks who are elderly, people with disabilities, those who are low income, and people with limited English proficiency, really don't show up very much when we're looking at planning documents that are pretty common in many counties, including emergency operation plans and hazard mitigation plans. And so what we looked at in the study, and this was a joint effort with students in the Master of Public Administration program here at UW-Oshkosh, really looked at how we can do a better job of engaging those types of folks in the planning efforts.
What factors make these groups of people more likely to suffer from a disaster? What is it about their situations that leads to that?
Yeah, so it's a great question. And the resource that I always go to really help me understand this is the Social Vulnerability Index, which is created by the CDC. So as you mentioned, right, we're looking at folks who have vulnerabilities to whether it's, you know, extreme weather events or, you know, disease outbreaks like COVID-19. These are the folks who don't necessarily have the resources really to prepare or recover from events like this. And that looks like things such as, you know, folks who don't have a vehicle. So if you aren't able to evacuate, if there is water coming up in your neighborhood, that's an issue, right? Also, there are things within the index that help us think about folks who maybe not be as mobile. So household composition is another factor. Homes with people who are, you know, age 65 or above, or homes with children who are, you know, older than 5 with a disability, those types of factors make it more difficult to address crises in certain ways. And then the other side of it is in the recovery phase, right? So if we think about not just when a disaster strikes, but after the fact, you know, folks who are below the poverty line or are unemployed or are low income aren't able to have the same types of resources as other folks who may be able to, you know, go for 1 month or more if some kind of financial issue comes up where they're not able to make it to work or things like that.
Why do you think that some of the more socially vulnerable people are left out of emergency response plans? What caused that?
Yeah, so I think, you know, a big part of this, and as I've been looking at this over time, it's really the difficulty, right, of on one side, engaging those types of folks in the planning process. And I really say this from a place of knowing that, you know, meetings may be held, there may be a strong effort by, you know, professionals in this area to bring people in, but meetings are held and folks don't show up. And I've seen that, you know, for over a decade. And so that part of it's really difficult. The other piece of it in emergency management, you know, just thinking about this from an individual level, unless folks have water coming in their basement, or unless, you know, there's no air conditioning in our home or our apartment, and there's a heat wave, we don't really prepare for things like this until they're at our front door or until they're really happening to us. And so, sure, Historically, it's been a really reactive area, but as these types of events become stronger, storms become stronger, heat becomes more intense, it's really important for us on a broad level, and I think a community level, to be able to come together and think about how we can work together and do better to help these types of folks get the resources and information and access that they need to stay safe when these types of events happen.
Sam Larson is the deputy director of the Whitburn Center for Governance and Policy Research. The center released a study in August showing how emergency response plans can better support socially vulnerable populations. Join in, 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seward. Responding to disaster situations has a range of challenges for local officials, especially when it comes to reaching the people who are impacted the most. Join in with your thoughts and questions, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sam Larson has been studying disaster response on a local and national level for more than a decade. She is assistant professor at UW Oshkosh and the deputy director of the Whitburn Center for Governance and Policy Research. The center has a new study on how to better protect vulnerable populations during and after a disaster. Sam is with us for about 10 more minutes. The study outlines how to better support socially vulnerable people during disasters. Sam, one way is to know the population before a disaster strikes, and the study specifically points to the city of Green Bay as an example. Can you explain what you found?
Sure. So, in Green Bay, and we focused again at the county level, so in Brown County, but of all of the counties that we looked at, we were really interested in Green Bay because, or I should say Brown County, because they have a few kind of data points that make them of interest. One is if we look at their social vulnerability level, they have a moderate social vulnerability level, and this ranges from low to high. So it's on the higher side for compared to the other counties that we looked at. They also have a resiliency score that we looked at. And that's the other really important piece when we're talking about vulnerability. We also need to look at what types of systems are in place to ensure or, determine whether or not the ability to respond will really be strong, or if we need to develop that. And so their resiliency is at about a medium high level. So they also have a fair amount of resiliency in place. But the key piece within Brown County that we want to dig into a bit further is thinking about groups such as those with limited English proficiency. So in Brown County, we looked at the data there, and it's higher than the state of Wisconsin on average. So it's a higher level there. They have a higher proportion of people of color, which also impacts vulnerability. And then, folks who are living with disabilities as well, and the population that's 65 or older. And so those are kind of the key pieces that are important. But what's even greater is that the index, I mentioned, we have a reading at the county level, but it also provides census tract level readings on these types of groups. And what we're seeing in Brown County is downtown Green Bay specifically has a much higher level of vulnerability than the surrounding area. So that data can be used to really focus in efforts on folks living and working in that area, and specifically living in that area, and starting to think about how we can engage those groups to a higher level.
Sam, we will go to the phone with Lexi from Fond du Lac. Hi, Lexi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And hi, Sam. This is Lexi. It's good to hear your voice. Hey, I'm just wondering what your study entails for climate change specifically and for Indigenous communities in Wisconsin. I'm sorry if you talked about that already and I missed it, but those two things specifically I was wondering about.
Thanks, Lexi. Sam?
Yeah, happy to discuss that. So the focus on climate change, what we're really starting to get at here is the idea of climate resiliency. And so that's kind of the overarching idea behind this study and motivation for it. Because what we're seeing, and you know, I'm not a specialist on the environmental side. I'm starting to work with more and more folks who are and have in the past. But right, what we're seeing in specifically East Central Wisconsin, the impacts of climate change will be more extreme heat and more intense thunderstorms, which can lead to flooding. And so those are the types of issues that we want to really focus on. The second piece, your question about looking at Indigenous communities. So we also brought that into this study and looked at, from a demographic perspective, right, where Indigenous communities are living. And that certainly is incorporated into the index, because one of the kind of higher risk and higher factors for vulnerability are Indigenous communities, BIPOC communities. And so I'm going to kind of step outside of our study, but look at the broader state of Wisconsin. If you look at vulnerability, the counties with the highest level of vulnerability in the state are Milwaukee County and Menominee County, largely because of higher proportions of people of color throughout Milwaukee County. And then, of course, the higher proportion of the Indigenous community in Menominee County. And so those are the areas as well, beyond this study, but hopefully in the next steps of the work that we're doing, where we want to expand our scope and look at the types of resiliency measures that are happening there to try to, you know, protect those folks to a higher extent and ensure that we're working with those communities in doing so.
We're talking about the ways socially vulnerable populations are negatively impacted by disasters and the ways local government can mitigate those impacts. Sam Larson has been studying disaster response on a local and national level for more than a decade. She is deputy director of the Whitburn Center for Governance and Policy Research. We only have about 2 minutes left in our time together, but I want to go to the phone again. We have Lester from Milwaukee. Hi, Lester.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. And thank you for coming on to the program this morning. What a critical topic that we all need to be discussing. I just got a quick question for you. Why or where is the component for the innovation approach to address some of these issues at this critical time, to address energy and food crisis for the people of color, children? I think it affects just not only people of color, but everyone when it floods, when it gets heat, people, indigenous people. I think that we all need to come together and sit down at the table and have funding for some innovation that address some of these critical issues at this time. Thank you, Lester.
Sam, what about the innovation component?
Yeah, it's such a fantastic question. And I'm really happy, Lester, that you brought up the community aspect of this. So on a national level, there's this framework that's called the whole community approach. And that's through the Federal Emergency Management Association, or FEMA. And that's the key piece, I think, that we need to be thinking about. Is this takes not just folks who are, you know, working in the public sector, not just emergency management folks. And that's something that we here at UW Oshkosh, and we have a sustainability institute here on campus, we're focusing on how to develop a climate resilience plan, and we're part of this initiative. But the key piece is working in partnership. We need to bring on board businesses, residents, you know, public officials, and universities. That's the key thing. There are a lot of resources at universities across the state. And so we want to make sure that we can tap into those resources. And I should say, as a faculty member here, be one of those resources to think through more innovative approaches, because it's really important. Lester brought up the energy piece of this, right? We need to start thinking forward on, you know, just this summer here in Oshkosh, we had a large thunderstorm and over 10,000 people were out of power for something like 8 hours. And so, and that can, you know, exacerbate pretty quickly. So we need to start thinking about what happens when that type of event occurs. And I think it's going to take a community level approach to thinking about this.
Sam, just briefly, in 15 seconds, what is the number one thing that local governments could do to improve their response?
Yeah, there's a continuum of engagement, 5 different levels. And I think the key piece is moving from just informing folks by, putting out Facebook posts and things like that to inviting people in and meeting up with them to get input on how we can best serve needs when we are experiencing these types of events.
Thank you. I'm sorry. That's all the time we have. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sam Larson, an assistant professor of public administration at the University of Wisconsin-Oshkosh, deputy director of the Whitburn Center for Governance and Policy Research. You can find the study released this month at wpr.org/mornings. Up ahead, we speak with a UW-Eau Claire researcher who looked at ways the UW system can improve emergency preparedness during a public health emergency. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seward. News update is next on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back.